Hello.
Hey, what do you say, King Buzzo?
Hello there.
Can you hear us all right?
Oh, yeah. Where are you guys at?
We are in Charleston, West Virginia.
Never heard of it.
You're not alone.
First of all, Buzz, I just want to say, my name's John, by the way, and I'm here with Roger.
We're old pals and old fans.
Thank you
for doing this. We're a nonprofit station, totally volunteer. So for you to take your time to chat with us for a little while, it's a pretty big deal for us. So thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
How's things out? You're out on the West Coast, correct?
You better believe it.
Buzz, we've, like Roger said, we've been Melvins fans for a long, long time. I'll tell you about the first time I saw the Melvins, 1999 in Pittsburgh. I was at this place called Club Laga, and it was like July. I go in, the place is pretty packed out. You guys were on tour with a band from Australia called the Cosmic Psychos. Does this sound familiar?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I go in, there all the equipment set up, looks like everything's ready to roll. There's a guy laying on stage, totally motionless.
Yeah.
So Cosmic Psychos come out, they tune up, they play for 30 or 40 minutes. The guy doesn't move a muscle. Cosmic Psychos go, you know, backstage, you and Dale come out, you guys tune up, everything starts to heat up. You hit a couple chords, Kevin jumps up, straps on the bass, like I don't know, man. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen.
That's Kevin. Yeah.
Did he do this often? Was this a shtick of his, or did he come up with something new every night? Or
Kevin did that quite often. Yes.
It was amazing, man. I always think about it.
He said it was a nice way to get a little bit of rest before the show. The whole set and then play. He did a bunch of stuff like that. One time we were opening for Tool, and we were playing in Portland, Oregon. And he talked the security in letting him put on a security outfit, right? Then he went down when the doors opened. He went down in front of the stage, like in the orchestra pit between the stage and the audience, and acted like he was a security guard, yelling at people, and, you know, pretending like he had the security outfit with a radio, the whole works, right?
Yeah.
And then me and Dale go out on stage, and we tell the audience that our bass player was sick, and if there was any volunteers that might maybe would like to come up and play with us tonight, you know? So a bunch of people raise their hands in the audience. It's like, you know, 20,000 people in the audience or something, and he raises his hand and goes, "Well, what about you?" He climbs up on stage and puts on the bass, and we just play our set, and then later we read a review, and the reviewer says, "Well, the Melvins bass player was sick and they had some security guy do it."
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it was hilarious. And he's out there moving gear around and, you know, stuff like that before. It's pretty funny. You know, yeah. So you guys are in Charleston?
Charleston, yeah. It's capital city of West Virginia.
Charleston, West Virginia. My family on my dad's side is all from Welch, West Virginia.
Oh, wow.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never been there.
Well, if you make your way down here, we can show you some incredibly weird stuff, I'm sure.
That's where my dad was born. My dad was born there.
Oh, wow.
In a house that had no running water and no electricity.
Yeah, my mom was born on a kitchen table up a holler, very similarly.
Yeah. That was very, very meager beginnings from there. And they moved to Washington State in the middle, another place in the middle of nowhere. I go, why did you bother moving across the country to a place that's literally exactly the same? Yeah.
Buzz, do you think that that's one reason? I mean, in my experience, you know, Roger and I, we're from rural America, and you are too. Do you find that Melvin's music and your music resonates with that type of crowd in a way?
I don't know. I mean, I had a hard time with that. As much as I understand rural America, rural America didn't understand me very
much.
Yeah. That was it. I don't know that that was my fault. When I was there, I just felt like not so much I didn't fit in, because I don't know where I fit in, but once I got out of there, I didn't feel like I was so much under a microscope, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Bigger world.
I moved from a very, very tiny mountain town in Washington State to a slightly bigger town that had about 2,000 people in it. And I moved into that town when I was in about sixth grade. And I started going to school with kids whose parents had went to school together, you know?
Yeah.
And I was an outsider, and that was it. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to get anywhere in that town. You're going to do work and get nowhere. And I just was not interested. And once I realized that the world was actually a bigger place, and there were other people out there that were maybe a little more like-minded to me, and it wasn't so much me as it was the place, mm-hmm. and that once you got out of there, the rest of the world didn't even know that place existed, you know? And you can kind of go out and make your own way somewhere else, then I felt a lot better about myself, you know? And I like the anonymity of a gigantic place. You know, I just kind of like it, losing myself in that. I also like the anonymity of losing yourself out in the wilderness as well. But usually with the wilderness, I love exploring and losing myself in nature now, as long as I end up at a hotel.
Right. No camping involved.
Nah, you know, I mean, as much as I love all that stuff, I mean, I grew up, you know, and certainly rural America with guns and all that kind of stuff. So I understand all that stuff, and I like all that stuff, and I have nothing wrong with it. I believe in all those sorts of freedoms and all those sorts of things, and I'm not afraid of it. I also love an urban environment as well. You know, I think you can be happy in both with both. I think there's a happy medium there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
Way back in those days, Buzz, do you remember the first record you bought with your own money?
First record I probably bought with my own money, I think it would have been Elton John, Captain Fantastic.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah, I think that would have been the first one. And then I bought a bunch of records probably when I was about 11 or 12. It would have been like Aerosmith, Ted Nugent, Kiss, stuff like that, you know.
All the standards.
Yeah, and then I got into stuff like Bowie by the time I was about 12 or 13. And then buying records in a... by seeing pictures in magazines like Cream,
sure.
And stuff like that. But I didn't know any. I didn't have any older siblings, or I was the oldest kid in my family, and knew no one that was interested in rock music at all. Came from a tiny town. There's no record stores, and so if I wanted a record, I had to mail order it. And so what I would do is I would mow lawns or whatever, or do whatever kind of grunt work I could find at that age. I mean, I've always worked. I've always had a job of one form or another. I don't come from money. So if I wanted things outside of the basics, I needed to go out and find my own money for that kind of stuff, which is fine with me, you know. And what I would do is I would put together a few dollars for a record. I would give that money to my mom. My mom would write me a check to this company. I would send that check to the record, whatever, mail order company. And then I would wait for months for the record to get there. And what people don't realize now, especially kids, is that back in the 70s, waiting time for a package was 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah.
Not 6 to 8 hours the way it is now.
Yeah, you're not waiting on a download then.
6 to 8 weeks for a delivery, you know. So you would mail it and I don't know what, you know, and then wait for a record to get there. So I would just buy records by these weird bands just by the way they looked in the magazines. You know, that's how I got into punk rock music at all, you know, and buy records by the Sex Pistols or the Clash or, you know, Elvis Costello or whoever they were, simply by the way they looked. Now, I never heard any of those bands prior to just buying them by seeing their pictures.
You still going to shows, Buzz?
Am I now? Yeah. You mean?
Well, I mean, pre-pandemic. Pre-pandemic.
Not this year. Obviously, no one's went to shows, but I spend on a normal year, I spend somewhere between 80 and 120 days a year in clubs.
Right.
And so when I'm home, I rarely ever go to shows, but if I do, it's usually bands that I know. And once in a while, I'll go. Ironically, you asked me what the first record I bought was the Elton John record. The last big show I went to was Elton John in Vegas.
Nice. Cool.
Yeah, that was really good. That wasn't even that big of a show. It was like 2,000 people, so that was nice. It was really good. But I will go. A lot of times, if it's a band that I know, I'll go down to their sound check and hang out with them.
Yeah.
That's usually a lot of fun. And then sometimes I'll watch part of the show and then cut out early sometimes, you know.
Roger, you got anything there?
Have you all been considering doing any more virtual gigs now that we're ate up with the pandemic?
Well, we've done two so far. We got our second one. We did one on New Year's, and we did one on Valentine's Day. Our second, the Valentine's Day special is up until Sunday. It's on melvins.veeps.com. And you can see it. It's only $5. So you can see it until Sunday.
Nice.
Yeah. So everybody check it out.
That's a great approach. I like that you all are taking that route.
Yeah. You know, I don't know how much people enjoy it, but ours is really cool. TV. And it's got interviews and live stuff. And it's really cool. So I think, you know, the people that have seen it really love it. So
nice.
Good follow on Instagram, too. I know you've been into the photography thing for a couple of years.
I've been into photography for a long time. I just had an Instagram for a couple of years. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah. I've been into your photography for a very short while.
Yeah, that's the first account I've ever had. So it's about a year and a half, a little bit. But thanks.
Yeah, man. Good stuff. I like those. I saw some pictures of Melt Banana on there. That was really cool.
Yeah. I've been bothering my touring mates for quite some time, taking pictures of them. So I've always had a big fascination with photography. It's one of my passions. And I just never, you know, I did it for myself and never really showed people that kind of thing, hardly. And then the guitar player from Tool and our bass player, Steven, kind of talked me into, you know, starting an Instagram account. This stuff is really good. And so, you know, I started it with the idea that I'm not in the pictures. I'm behind the camera, you know, so it's not selfies or anything like that. It's just me taking the pictures. So, but I'm a street photographer. I don't think I would do good in a studio, or I'm not good at taking pictures of bands like live shows. I'm not good at that.
Yeah.
But I'm good out in the street. And that's where my strengths lie. And I love photography. I take pictures every single day. Pretty much. On tour, I take pictures all day, every day, pretty much.
Hmm. The second time I saw Melvins, I think it was the loudest show. At that time, it was the loudest show I ever saw.
Wow, great.
That was Mr. Small's Theater. Yeah.
That's in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. We always have to go up there to, you know, to see the shows that come through. But I know you guys have played Morgantown, West Virginia, 123 Pleasant Street.
We've played there a number of times.
Oh, okay.
Oh, really? I thought it was just for the 50 States tour.
No, we played there a couple different places. I'm trying to think if we played anywhere else in West Virginia. Probably. I know on our very first tour of the U.S. in 1986, we had a show set up in Charleston, and it got canceled at the last minute. We were on our way there, called the club, the promoter for Directions, and the show had been canceled the night before.
Oh, wow. We'd like to formally apologize.
Yes. Yeah, we basically blamed you guys. Yeah. I can't remember what the problem was, but that was a horrible tour. Drove home from the East Coast and vowed to never tour again.
Oh, wow.
And we didn't tour again until about 89. You know? We just said, it's just not worth it. Everybody hates us. The world wasn't ready for our music. You know? We're just not ready for it. So
I think more than ever, really, Buzz, you know, that in a world today where everything is so sugar-coated, everyone's so coddled, and call it what you will, but Melvin's, for me, there's always been this stalwart of integrity. You take that how you will, but...
And honesty.
Yeah, there's honesty in the art, and I think we need it more than ever, really. Everything's so disposable, you know?
Yeah, that's probably true. Everything is, it's disposable. Everything lasts about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you'll see something, you know, like, do you remember last week when Marilyn Manson was, his career was over?
Sure.
That'll last about a week and no one will care. And then he'll be back.
Yeah.
You know?